This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Another kick-ass episode for you today. Today, we're going to be talking with Wes Burmeister from Southern Minnesota as he kind of tells us this tale of locating a brand new piece of public property that had been turned over from state ground to public ground, and him and his brother were probably the first people to get in there and get their hands on two really good bucks for the area. And it's a really good episode. We talk about how he kind of laid off of it. He didn't go into it. He did some glassing, he did some scouting, and then right off the bat, in this early season time frame. He went in on a couple occasions, him and his brother, and they sealed the deal and got the job done on two pretty good bucks. So that's what today's story is about. But I don't even know what I want to talk about today. It's like 11:30 at night, and I just now am starting to work. And my son has gotten up like three times, and he only wants to sleep with daddy, and only daddy can put him to bed. So I play daddy daycare all day, and then I come up here and I try to work, and then I got to go back down for bedtime. And that's why I have like a row of empty spotted cows. I went to Wisconsin a couple weekends ago, and I pulled out the I stopped at a gas station and bought a case of the new Glarus, I think it's pronounced, spotted cow. And so I've been drinking those this week, and I feel like I should probably just stop after what I have in front of me, but it's going to be a long night. And the more I drink, the less efficient I get. So I should probably stop, continue my current effectiveness, and then just go to bed. But I'll be up for a while yet, probably until tomorrow, and working on the network and launching podcasts and replying to emails and doing some social work and all the other stuff that revolves around running a business. And yeah, so daddy daycare all day, running a company by night. I need to, like, I'm gonna tell you this, I'll say this: if you are a college student and you're listening to this and you're interested in doing a internship for the Sportsman's Nation, and you want to get into the hunting industry in some way, shape, or form, hit me up on Instagram through Nine Finger Chronicles Instagram page, and we can talk, because I am, I need help. I need some additional help, and I would be willing to pay anywhere from $0 to just enough, if that makes sense, to help for you guys to, help, get an internship. But I'll tell you what I will do is when you do it, let's say you'd get the internship, I would write the best possible review so you could get a job with another company. And hell, maybe I'll be able to pay you full time, in a couple of years. Maybe. Who knows? We'll see. We're growing. The Sportsman's Nation is growing at a good clip, and I'm pretty excited. Like, I'm to that point where I'm almost to the point where I can hire someone full time, but not quite there yet. Right. So I just need to take that next little step. And I think for every company, that's the next big step. And then once I have two people working for the company, game over. Like, I'm taking over the industry. No doubt about it. That sounds very arrogant, but I'm pretty confident that what we will be able to do at the Sportsman's Nation is going to be kick ass on the next step, whatever that next step is. So, and I don't want to come off as arrogant, but I am focused on a goal, and I will reach that goal, and that goal is world domination. So I say that, with an asterisk, because I don't really want to take over the world. I don't care about like the Middle East. I don't want to take over the Middle East. I just want to take over certain parts of the world, if that makes sense. So I went on a rant there, and I wanted to do a commercial here, and we're going to do four brands real quick, and I'm going to talk about them real fast, because just like you, I don't like listening to advertisements on this podcast, or really any podcast, but it is a necessary evil, right? They pay my bills, and you get to listen to this kick-ass podcast. And based off the numbers that I get to see, there's a lot of people out here that listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Sportsman's Nation and all that stuff. So Ozonix, right? I've been using Ozonix since it came out. Since it was the size of a DVD player, heavy as shit, carried it into the woods. I used it on a couple of the first hunts, and I was blown away by what it did within the first, 5 sets that I had. So I ended up, long story short, started working with a company when I was working with White Knuckle Productions, and then I've had some encounters that have just basically sealed the deal for me. I mean, I've had mature bucks walk right downwind to me. And this is only something that you can experience. You know, I would be a skeptic too. Yeah, and you can play the wind all you want, right? I play the wind. I play the wind. I cut it hard. But that Ozonics is there for a reason. It's almost like a safety net for you. And if it gets a little too close, they're not getting a nose full of human. They're getting some distorted smell. They're not sure what it is. Some deer react like nonchalantly and they just smell it. Some deer get curious, or some deer just keep moving on through, right? I've had very, very, very few where they put their nose up and they run away, right? Did it happen? Yes. However, I'm telling you, the functionality in the field is amazing. The functionality out of the field is even better. If you were to ask me, throw all my clothes after a long day of hunting, you're sweaty, you're gross, there's different smells and bacteria on your clothes which cause odor, throw that in the dry wash bag or their new closet, run a cycle, you have clean clothes, odorless clothes, and you walk out to the tree stand that next morning and you feel invisible. It's crazy. I love it. So ozonixhunting.com. If you buy one of their units, you will get a free dry wash bag and you can enter the discount code NFC21, and you will definitely get a free dry wash bag with your purchase of a unit. Go take advantage of that, because that's like a $150-$200 savings right there. So huge fan of Ozonics. Next is Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands. All I should have to say now is just the name of the company, lonewolfhuntinggear.com. You've heard me talk about it. You know that I'm a run and gun guy. You know that I'm a fan of the four sticks and the assault. I was talking to a buddy about this the other day. I've killed all of my deer, well, except last year. Last year I shot my buck from the ground off of pure luck, right? But every other deer that I've shot since 2007, 2006, I shot my buck out of a ladder stand. Then I got a lone wolf, and every single deer I've shot since then, whether it is a doe or a buck, has been out of a lone wolf tree stand, right? So go check it out. I mean, lone wolf, let's see, what's the website here? They're blocking it. lonewolfhuntingproducts.com. lonewolfhuntingproducts.com. Check out their hang-ons. Check out their climbers. Some guys like climbers. I'm a huge fan of the four sticks and the assault. And then when you do decide to purchase, enter the discount code 9FC21, 9FC21, and you're going to save $50 off of all purchases over $200. That's a big deal. Exodus trail cameras, right? So Velvet Fest is over at this point, but I will say this, these guys, they have a great company, right? Chad, one of their owners and the guy that I know probably the most over there, I've been talking and working with him since day one, almost day one. And like even way back in the day in the first couple episodes of the podcast, and I'm still running cameras however many years ago, I think they're 6 or 7 years old now. I think they're 6 years old. I have some of their first batch cameras that are still in rotation today. I don't know a lot of other brands, as far as trail cameras are concerned, that hold the test of time that long. And they have their 5-year warranty, which inside 5 years, if your camera takes a shit, you can get a discount on a new camera. Right. And so first off, you need to go to exodusoutdoorgear.com and check out their 5-year no BS warranty. Right. Read up on that. No other trail camera company is doing that. I've used several other trail cameras in my life, and none of them hold a candle to Exodus. Straight up, you turn it on, you walk away, and it works. That's all I want from a trail camera. And for some reason, other brands just don't deliver that same whatever. They just, for some reason, they can't. There's always issues. I don't know. Maybe I'm a dumbass, right? Maybe I don't follow instructions. But all I know is when I walk away from an Exodus trail camera, I'm very confident that it is taking pictures. It's doing what it's supposed to do. ExodusOutdoorGear.com. Check out their lineup of cameras, solar panels, batteries, and all that stuff. And they have a lot of awesome content about how to properly care for and run a trail camera as far as trail camera strategy is concerned. And so you can get that on their website too, ExodusOutdoorGear.com. Next company and last company here is Excalibur Crossbows. And you can go find all this information on ExcaliburCrossbow.com. Now, they have a badass new product. It's called the Twin Strike. And it is a crossbow that holds two loaded bolts, right? So go check it out. It's gnarly. It's crazy. The next thing I want to say about this is this company's been around for 30 years, right? Although I can't use a crossbow in Iowa, right? This company is made, it's not over-engineered. You see a lot of things get over-engineered and they're like, oh dude, you know, this thing can shoot 1,000 yards and 100 miles an hour or whatever it is. These guys they have a great crossbow. They have an affordable crossbow. They have a durable crossbow, which is very important. I appreciate durable products. And I also appreciate companies that have been around a long time because they understand their customer wants and needs. They understand marketplace wants and needs. And they deliver that every single time when they deliver a crossbow to the masses or whatever. So definitely check out Excalibur. Great history, great products. Just go check out the videos that these guys make. They're throwing crossbows off of corn cribs, and then they're going and they're shooting them, and they're dead-eye dick. So ExcaliburCrossbow.com, check them out. The huge lineup for all shapes and sizes. So there is the commercial section of this podcast. Really appreciate everybody tuning in. Please follow Nine Finger Chronicles on Instagram and Facebook. And when you do listen to this, right, take a picture in your truck. Take a picture or a screen share. Tag me in it, and I'll reshare that on social media. Let's grow this community even bigger. And I've made so many great connections throughout the years through social media. Hell, I think I'm going on my Nebraska hunt this year with a complete stranger that I've met through Instagram. So there's that. I mean, it could literally go anywhere. So tag me in a picture of you listening to the Nine Finger Chronicles, and let's grow this community even more than we already have. Make sure you guys are following along to all of the podcasts that are coming out of the Sportsman's Nation. And enough talk, man. Let's get into today's episode. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today from Southern Minnesota, Wes. God damn it. Wes Burmeister?
Yep.
Burmeister. God, I got it. That's how I live these days. Like, my mind just isn't connecting. I yell at my kids.
I hear you.
I yell at my kids so much, and they're just like, my life is chaos right now. I am so jacked that school is starting in 2 weeks. Like, everything is going to change in my life, and I'm so excited. It's almost like that guy who is getting ready to get out of jail and join society again. That's kind of what I feel like. Like, don't screw anything up. You know, like, I'm just going to chill. I'm just going to relax. I don't want to cause any drama because I know that they're going back to school in 2 weeks, and that's just going to open my life up, and it's going to be great.
Yep. Yep, and it's getting close to deer season.
Ooh,
so
buddy. Yes,
that'll
it
help
is.
Too.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right, so Wes, before we start talking deer here, what do you do for a living?
I started a excavation business with one of my younger brothers last year, so we're going on our second season right now doing that. So
oh, nice.
I've pretty much been doing construction for, I don't even know, my entire life, it seems like.
Yeah.
I did 9 years in the Army Reserves.
Okay.
As a carpenter mason, too. And I did some college for construction management. So it's just been, it's construction as long as I can remember.
Yeah. So you drive like bulldozers and backhoes and that kind of stuff all day long.
Yep. A lot of earth moving stuff. Yep. We've actually been doing a lot of DNR jobs right now. A lot of the farmers around here, some of them are turning their fields back into crep or selling it to the Minnesota DNR. We actually are just starting a new job. We just mobilized our equipment down to the Spirit Lake Fish Hatchery right
okay.
by Okoboji there.
Yeah.
You probably kind of know where that's at.
I do.
So
here,
a lot of stuff like that.
Here's my heavy equipment. It wasn't like a bulldozer, but it was a big like skid loader or, like a front end loader type deal. And you know how
yep.
on the back of them is where you put the fuel and the hydraulics in?
Yeah.
It's almost on the back of like the holes look exactly the same. And this is why I'm a dumbass. So it's running low on gas. And I open one of the holes and I put the diesel fuel in. I start loading it up and I, I shut it and then I go to turn it on. It turns on and the gas gauge is still blinking. I'm like, what the hell? And I'm just like, I'm driving it around. Nothing's going on. I'm just like, hey, this isn't working. And then I go back. I put diesel fuel in the hydraulic, area of that of that machine. Oh
mm-hmm.
my God. I don't know if I've to this day if I've ever had a boss get so pissed at me. I was like 18, right out of high school. All I did all day long was jackhammer concrete and concrete and remove it and put it in the back of the truck and someone else, did it. So got rid of it. So I got my ass chewed. Because they had to stop using that machinery.
Man.
They had to, call some guy out to drain everything and clean it
yep.
and fix it back up. They're like, oh, this could have exploded and you could have died. And I'm just like, Jesus, man. Like, I didn't know. I'm sorry. And I felt like a dumbass until school started.
Yeah,
so.
Yep. I worked for a larger excavation business before I started my own, and we had that happen quite a bit of times to
yeah.
the point where we started putting padlocks on those caps, or they would spray paint the fuel cap green for
yeah.
diesel fuel.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So I'm not the only one
on the hydraulic system. No.
Oh God, that makes me feel a little bit better now.
I mean, you might be like the 15th person I've known that's done that.
Perfect.
But yeah.
Perfect. Well, I tell you what, I'm a dumbass, but not the first dumbass maybe. Right.
I guess so.
All right. So let's talk deer, man. Like I just checked some trail cameras,
I've been seeing that.
Yeah. Saturday morning. And I got two hogs on camera, but over the years I used to get, oh my God, I got, on the farm right now, I got a booner, is like, he's a giant. He's going to be, 172, blah, just all that bullshit, right? You get fired up.
Yep,
and then
yep.
something happens in September or early October, and then they just disappear and you don't ever see them again until maybe the following year or maybe
right.
randomly on a trail camera during the rut.
Yep.
As of right now, do you have any trail cameras out, and do you have anything scouted? You have anything located? I mean, do you got any returning customers that maybe you ran into last year and you're going after again this year?
Well, I have 11 trail cameras out that I left out all year. I'm sure the batteries are dead. I just got super busy, so I have a 2-year-old and a 5-month-old.
Oh, dang.
We're remodeling a house. So I just, before I knew it, like winter was almost over, and I was going to go get my trail cameras out because I don't really like to leave them out all winter round. I don't know. I don't think it's probably very good for them. And the batteries always die. I use those lithium ones, but they still die super fast in the winter. And deer are herded up, you know, they don't really move around a lot in the winter. So I left all them out. So I got to go put batteries in them. And I left quite a bit of tree stands out in the private land I have to hunt. And I did take a couple down, but, that's about it. I would say about this time of the year, like mid-August, is when I kind of start shifting more towards getting excited about deer hunting.
Yeah.
We did do a drive around where I kind of scouted some of the public land where I shot these two last deer last year. But otherwise, I haven't done much. I'll probably be getting my bow out to start shooting here this weekend. And
yeah.
Just start getting into the rhythm of things again and get my trail cameras up and going. So
okay.
But not a lot.
When's Minnesota's opener? So,
it's usually September 16th. I haven't looked exactly when the opener is, but I believe last year was September 16th was the opener, or the 13th.
Yeah.
But somewhere around there, early September.
Okay. So we'll kind of cut right to the chase, right? So last year in September, early season, you connected on, you and your brother connected on two really good bucks on public ground.
In an area that's, I mean, not very deery. It's like 95% egg country here.
Okay. So all right. So walk us through this property. Like, talk to us a little bit about how did you locate this property. And what I mean located, I mean like what made you like either look on a map or drive along a road know about this property and say, hey, you know what, I want to put my time in on this property to see if it's going to hold any deer.
Okay, so first, you know, if we probably rewind 2 years ago, before this land became public, because it was private 2 years ago.
Okay.
I would drive by it and I would see deer out there. And so where we live, it's very flat, not a lot of trees, not a lot of hills, a lot of crop fields. If you know where like that Okoboji area is, you're north, West Iowa, it's pretty much exactly like that. Where
farm country.
In central, south central. Yep. Well, this one piece of property, it actually, a lot of locals call it like a mini Montana. It's very hilly. There's a little creek running through it. There's tree patches. So it looks more deery than the rest of the land around us, kind of.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of, as I was kind of scouting for public land, because there's kind of this large patch of public land north of where I live, I would always drive by there and see the deer, but it was always private. So the following year, when we started our construction business, we got a bid sent to us through an email about this exact property, wanting some fence removal done, some trees taken down, some old farm machinery pulled out of, you know, overgrown groves and stuff like that. So that's kind of what cued me that, oh, this is going into public land. So we got awarded the job. We were going to start it like late fall, but I knew it was public at that point. And there actually wasn't even public land signs up quite yet, but I would say they probably put them up like, end of August, September. So then, you know, people kind of started to find out, oh, this is going into public.
Yeah.
So me in September, especially with the kids in the business now, my time just gets super limited. So I just thought, I know there's deer here. I've seen there's deer here for the last 2 years. You know, it's a deery property. There's actually trees and ravines and hills. So I just grabbed my bow, and I think it was like a Thursday night or something after work, and I went out there.
And this is 2 years ago, right?
No, this is last year now.
Oh, okay. All right. So hang on 1 second, because we skipped like a whole bunch of time. So you got a bid for this job to do some work on it 2 years ago?
No. So 2 years ago, it was just private land to me. I didn't know it was going into public. I didn't know he was selling it to the DNR. So then last year, before hunting season, so like last year's summertime, it came out for bid, and that's how I found out that this private property was going to be going into public land.
Okay,
so I kind of had a heads up
for
most people, because so essentially it was probably kind of like mostly private land when we got in there in September, because you know not a lot of people are
even know about it yet.
Walks,
yeah.
In public, well, even your normal public land, you know, not a lot of people want to go walk through tall green grass in the middle of July when it's 90 degrees out, 80% humidity. So they usually don't get bumped a lot on public
at
the beginning of the year. But this one was, I mean, it was essentially private, and the farmer that owned it, he wasn't doing a lot back there besides some farming. So it was pretty low-key property.
Okay. So you knew it was public. Did you go in July or August to do any type of scouting or hang any cameras before the season actually started?
Well, in Minnesota, I mean, I guess as far as I know, unless they've changed something, we're not allowed to hang trail cameras on public land. I think it's illegal.
Oh, really?
So I didn't get, I believe so. I mean, I guess I haven't checked the regulations about that. And I don't really have an interest in putting it on public land, because I don't really want my cameras stole anyways. But I'm pretty sure, 90% sure, that you can't put, at least in southern Minnesota, trail cameras out on public land.
Yeah. Okay. So the only thing that you could do,
you have to take down every day too. So
you can't leave a stand up overnight.
Yep, you got to take it down. Oh. Unless something's changed that I don't know about.
But okay.
Last time I looked, you had to take it down.
Okay. So I'm sure we'll have people fact check that. But
I'm sure that's why I'm saying as far as I understand.
Right. Okay, so anyway, we have you identify this piece through a bid, right? You probably got a little bit of a heads up because there's because of a work contract. But at June, July timeframe, it was already public ground, just not posted public yet, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I think like late August, I finally seen them put some signs up, which I was kind of like, shit about, you know, I was hoping, because if you went on the plaque book, the updated plaque book, it showed that it was public land.
I gotcha.
But actually, I think Hunt Stand said it was public, and I think Onyx wasn't quite caught up yet. They were still saying it was in the farmer's name, I believe.
Gotcha. Okay.
But so June, July, when I knew, you know, it was out for bid, it was going into public, I did, you know, at night I'd get off work, whatever, go for a drive, grab my binoculars, and just, you know, right about that sundown time is when I just try and go like drive from the road, and I can glass over these grass fields, and I just started keeping a little bit more of an eye on it.
Right.
That's about all my scouting on that property.
Did you see anything while you were doing that?
Yep. I seen, you know, some does coming out to feed, cause it was still a cornfield. A lot of it, you know, you had your tree and some low bottom grass patches. There's a pond in there that you couldn't farm, but it was still a cornfield. You could, you know, kind of see them coming out of the trees and walking down like a grass fence line and going to the corn and stuff like that. So
okay, so
I did not see any bucks when I was scouting, but I seen some does, and So I knew there were some deer in there.
All right. So your first time ever going in there to hunt was your first time ever in there then, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So when you went in there that first, like, break this property down for us. Like, talk to us a little bit about the terrain. You had a hunt stand, so you had the ability to do some digital mapping and look at the surrounding areas. Like, break it down for us and then give us your best idea of what you thought the deer were doing and what your plan was to get in there and hunt something that you didn't even know was there.
So the first thing that turned me on about it was the fact that there was actually timber, because there's actually not a lot of timber around where I'm at. So that was the first thing I cued on. Then there was essentially, it used to be a private pond that was about smack dab in the middle of this property. The property is about, I think it's like 380 acres maybe. And then there's just some scattered grass patches and like low bottoms that were too low to farm. So I knew they either, they're not going to be usually bedding in the corn around places like that. I knew that they'd be bedding, in a low bottom because it's usually a little cooler or by some sort of water, or in the trees. So I kind of cued on those. Obviously it's a hit or miss what field they're going to, because they have thousands of acres of fields to choose from where they want to go eat.
So basically any wind direction they could go and, pick. Any egg
field.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't even, unless I see like a large beaten down path or something, I have an idea, but I mean, they can take their pick where they want to go for food, especially, before they start harvesting.
Yeah. So, all right.
So I kind of just cued on like the treed areas, the low bottoms, the water sources.
Gotcha.
Played the wind a little bit and just kind of went in with hunt stand and tried to kind of figure it out.
Yeah. So, and your first time in, you said to yourself, hey man, I'm not even going to bring a stand, right? You're just bow in hand.
I had my Red Wing work boots on, some Carhartt pants that I work outside every day, so I figured, what the hell? And actually, I listened to a podcast of you say, I think it was last year, you're like, I'm just going to try wearing some solid colors once, I thought, fuck, why not?
Yeah.
Because if you get home from work and you shower and you get your clothes on and you get your gear on and you go out and, I mean, by that time you've already missed an hour and a half of hunting.
Right.
So right. I just threw a, my probably was a long sleeve at that time. It was 70 degrees, but I had an old Army combat shirt. I threw that on and I had some tan pants on and my boots, and I just walked out and kind of, cause I've never been out on this property either. It's always been private, and just kind of stayed low and had my binocs out and tried to watch for deer movement and got in a little deeper, and I didn't see or hear nothing the first night I was in there.
Okay. While you were out there, were you able to identify any sign, any travel corridors, any beaten down paths, anything that said to you, man, there's not shit in here, or there's some, it could be good?
So the first night I was in there, I found an old ladder stand. So that kind of cued me like, well, maybe the person that was hunting this private last year, I mean, the stand was like, the seats were ripped up, so it looked like it hadn't been used for quite a while. But I just thought, well, if there's a stand here, and there was kind of a nice path, like, but it was like a, like somebody cut that path, like it could have fit a tractor through it type of path. So I kind of hung out there for a little bit and just kept getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. So then I kind of moved back to a high ground where I could kind of overlook a big grass low bottom. and tried to see if I could see any deer coming out of bedding going into the cornfield, because it was a standing cornfield, and didn't see nothing. So the first night, I was kind of like, God, that's crazy. There's no deer here, but maybe there's not, but it's like the perfect setup. But over the, you know, scouting it last year and even this year, I knew there was deer in there. I didn't quite know where they were going. So then the next time I went in hunting, which I took my youngest brother with me, I went down to that private pond. Well, it's a pond that was in the middle of this property, just right in the middle, no path or nothing. You got to walk to it. It's probably, I don't even know, half mile, three quarters of a mile walk back there.
Yeah. And that was the second night, right?
Yep, that was the second night, maybe like 2 days later. That was probably like a weekend night.
Yeah.
Also would have been my youngest brother's first ever time bow hunting that I shot that deer.
Okay. So. Yep.
And I didn't give them, I'm letting them borrow. I have a Mission craze that I use for bow fishing. So I let him borrow that. He bought all the accessories for the bow, and we just set up one of the Mission crazes, which you can crank up to 70 pounds if you want. They go like from like 30 to 70. So he's using that bow, been practicing at my house, and then we went out together. I kind of helped him get a spot, and then I took a walk down to that pond.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like there wasn't really any overwhelming deer sign back in there. It was just like, hey man, nobody knows about this piece yet. I want to be the first guy to really get back in there and give it a look.
Yeah, pretty much. Deer don't like people, and so I just figured this is very untouched, is very thick back there. And I knew it was going into public, and I knew a lot of people didn't know about it yet because it's so new. So we just kept at it because I knew there was something back there.
Okay. Just get like a gut feeling.
Yep, because, around here, usually when they turn DNR land or the crop ground into DNR land, it's usually just grass.
Yeah.
It's prairie. So just the trees and the rough terrain, just I knew that was a good deer spot.
Okay. All right, so... Second night, you're making your way back into this pond, right? Talk to us a little bit about your access route, why you chose to walk where you did, what the wind was doing. Like, break down the scenario for us so we kind of get an overview or a visual of where these deer came from.
Okay, so for the first night, I came in on the south side of the property, and I kind of wanted to get down to that pond, but it got so thick with thistles and mosquitoes that I just thought I'll just hang out here because I don't really know what's over the hill anyways. You couldn't see the pond. You had to walk over a hill and down to the pond. I didn't want to bump deer out my first night. So then the second night, we accessed it from the north side on a south wind. And I kind of dropped my brother off more on there's a big grass bowl. And actually when we were walking in, we actually spooked a buck. So then that was the first buck we seen when we were walking in, to the property. So I dropped him off on the more, northern west side of the property, 'cause I knew I was going to the pond and I doubt my scent would have traveled a half a mile towards him, but either way, just to be on the safe side, I didn't want my wind, hitting his where he was at. So we kind of offset him more to the west. I went a little more to the east. And then it's just a long walk kind of through a cornfield, about a half mile, back to the pond. And then with the south wind, I kind of wanted to stay on the north side of the pond, but I kind of walked along the edge of the pond because there was trees hanging over trying to look for, the beginnings of a scrape or maybe a buck rubbed their velvet off on a tree or something. didn't really see a lot there, and there was just a cornfield behind me. So I decided to go on the south side of the pond on a south wind. So I knew my scent would be kind of blowing over the pond, which I didn't think was such a bad idea. And I stayed on the east side of this pond, and probably to my west, the pond was a quarter mile to the west in length, roughly.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, I hovered down by this broken down tree, and I was just getting eaten alive by mosquitoes to the point where it was just like, this isn't worth it.
Yeah.
So I stood up, and we probably had like 2 hours before sundown, and I went to a tree that was a little more on a hill, and it was teed in to a fence line coming from this drove more to the south of the property. So I thought, well, if they're bedded, up in this drove, they could walk down this fence line, you know, to get to the pond, or there was kind of an open pasture of grass. So I liked that. It was in the wind, so the mosquitoes weren't getting on me. You're probably going to kick my ass because I didn't have a tree stand or safety harness. I crawled up into the tree on like a, stood on a crotch in the crotch of the tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
About, I don't know, 10 feet off the ground maybe.
Okay. So.
And that was my tree stand for the night.
Gotcha. Quick question. Like, how tall was this grass that you were kind of making your way through? I mean, did it do a good job of hiding you?
Yeah, it was probably like up to my belly button or so. I'm about 6 foot. So, I mean, it was fairly tall and thick,
gotcha.
But there was corn. So there was corn surrounding this entire, minus that fence line, there was corn surrounding this whole pond and this grass pasture that was just in the middle of this, essentially a cornfield with fence lines, grass fence lines connecting it.
Okay. So it was secluded. Right.
The deer wouldn't really be able to see me walking up to them unless they were literally hanging out on the edge of the cornfield.
Yeah. Okay. That's crazy. I love places like that. I have a couple places too, where it's just like 180 acres of standing crops all in one spot. And there's this grass little low area that's kind of a buffer strip waterway, like erosion control zone.
Yep.
In this low spot, you can't see it from the road, even with beans. There's a couple trees back there, and they just love to hang out there this time of year. All right. So, you climbed up in this tree, just tried to get a better advantage. At this point, you still didn't, other than some of the does that you saw, like you didn't know there was any big bucks back there.
Well, that buck we jumped up, which was bedded in the grass right off the track, we did know he was back there, and that was, well, that was hard to tell. It was like a decent 8, maybe a smaller 10. And when I'm talking like our size, you're talking like 110-inch, 120-inch buck.
Okay.
Is decent for around here.
Gotcha.
Some people have some private on like the creek, and they get some big ones during shotgun, but that's very rare.
Right. Okay. So you saw a buck. Now, would that buck have been a shooter if you, if he walked by your tree, or would you have let him walk?
No. Last year and probably this year, just because of time, I'll probably take the first 100-inch decent 8-point buck. That okay. walks across me just because we don't have a lot of, I've been hunting bow for 7 years, and very rarely have I had, because I party hunt with my wife too, and I usually put her in a nicer spot and I'll go sit back in a maybe, and she gives me some quota like, you're not allowed to shoot an 8-pointer, it has to be a big 10 if you're gonna pull the trigger type of thing. So I'm kind of just there for moral support.
Yeah.
But I very rarely have seen you get a second chance around here at a 8-pointer or bigger deer. So I usually just take the first decent 8-pointer, like the first 90 to 120 inch 8-pointer that walks in front of me. Gotcha. I'm happy with that.
All right.
Now it gets my heart going. So,
so you're up in this tree. What time was it?
Oh, well, let's see. Sundown is before daylight savings. Oh, I can't, I don't know. I don't want to say what it is and people get all weird, but it's, I don't know, whatever. It's like an hour and a half before sundown, before daylight saving in September. So maybe that's like 6:30 or 7, sounds about right.
Okay. All right. So,
because you got to shoot, what is it, half hour after sundown is end of shooting light or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. All right. So, all right. So you're in the tree. What do you start seeing? Any movement, anything cool, like anything that says, hey, man, I need to get down and move, or are you in a good spot?
I didn't see any does go by me or nothing. There's some ducks hanging out in the pond, and that was about it. And I kind of broke my golden rule. I usually like to sit in the stand till the exact last minute of shooting time, and then I start to get down. And I just thought, well, what the hell? It's the second night. I got the rest of the year till December 31st to hunt. I knew I had a long walk back to my younger brother, who I knew was getting eaten up by mosquitoes, so I didn't want to make it miserable for him. So about the last 8 minutes, shooting light, I turned around to start setting my bow down. There were some branches that were broke that I could kind of hang my bow on as I made my way down. So I released my my release from the string. I usually take my quiver off of my bow. I just don't like the extra weight on there. Put my quiver back on, took my bow out, and I didn't see nothing, so I was like, whatever. I'll just head back to the truck just the second night. And as I turned around to set my bow down, I look up because the fence line went up the hill just to kind of double check, because that's kind of where I thought the deer would come from if they were to come there, or I thought they're going to come from the west on the north or the south side of the pond, because I had about a quarter mile of tree patch on the pond there. So I knew they were either probably going to come from either of those directions. And sure as shit, 8 minutes left to go with sundown, this buck kind of crests over the hill, walking right towards me down that fence line towards the tree. So then it was a matter of time of trying to reshift my feet around and get my bow back up and get an arrow out, get, you know, hooked back in and get ready.
So was this the same buck that you jumped previously?
Nope, this is a totally different buck.
Okay, so, when you first saw this buck, were you like, this is a shooter, like a no-doubt shooter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No, so, his rack in the skyline was like, it was, for me, it was like, hell yeah.
All right.
Plus, I knew it was going to be my first public land buck, which I've been kind of trying to get done, and I've also wanted to shoot a buck in every month that you can legally hunt too. So that was September, it was the first September buck, first public land buck, and first buck in the county that I live in that I've actually shot a deer in that county, because I usually go hunt in a different county just because of the low deer population around here, or buck population I should say.
Yeah. So just so everybody knows the rest of the story, like, how old did you how old is this buck? How big is his antlers? Like, describe him so we get a good visual.
I would say he's probably a 2.5-year-old, maybe a 3, because his body seemed kind of younger yet, but I think, you know, he had pretty good genetics, so his horns were nice. I measured him out at like 115. What's pretty unique about him, on one side, he blades out at the end of his main beam for about 6 inches, and then he's got like a, oh, I don't know, 1.5-2 inch drop time.
Oh, nice.
Which I did not know about. That was a surprise to me when I walked up.
Cool.
Because it was just getting down to those last dusk periods, you know, where you're kind of you can see the silhouette and you can see the horns, but you can't, you know, zoom in on all the fine details at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So you identify this buck's a shooter. He's making his way towards you. You climb down the tree, then you climb back up it. Is that right?
No, I stayed in the tree the whole time. I was getting ready to get out of the tree about 8 minutes before last shooting light. And then as I was turning around and I, you know, because I was 8-10 feet up in the air, so I had to set my bow on a branch, and then I was going to make my way down the trunk and grab my bow from the ground. And when I spun around to do that, that's when I seen him coming towards me.
All right. So he's making his way towards you. Why don't you just walk us through the rest of the rest of that encounter?
So when I seen him silhouette over the hill, walking towards me, I obviously, whatever, heart started pumping, and I started scrambling to try and quietly shift my feet around to where I would know where my shooting lane was, essentially, without spooking him, because he was probably 30 yards away, 40 yards away at that point.
Yeah.
Re-get hooked back into my string, get an arrow in there, and then it was just kind of wait. By the time I kind of got all that done, he was directly under my tree, and he was kind of thrashing his horns around in a bush right under my tree, which I don't really like those straight down shots.
Yeah.
So I let him. I could have shot through the branches because he's probably so close. It's very thin, but I didn't like that idea. I had a feeling he was going to walk out into the open grass pasture. So I kind of waited for that, and he did. Pulled back. Smoked him. He took off running into the cornfield. Kind of just listened at that point. I heard him crash, but I didn't know. Got out of the stand, found my arrow, full pass through. It seemed like I kind of got gut, just because it seemed like there was like a hay or a stink to it. But I didn't when I gutted him. And then I kind of followed his blood trail, which it wasn't super thick, but it was a consistent droplet into the corn. And then at the corn, I just kind of stopped because I knew I had to go get my younger brother anyways. So I just thought, well, what the hell? I'll just let him sit in there. He's either dead or he needs time anyways. So I didn't text my brother or nothing. He ended up calling me or texting me and going, where you at? And I just walked through the cornfield and got up to him. And I said, sorry, dude, we're going to have to drag a deer out of here tonight.
That's awesome.
5 degrees, mosquitoes are all over the place. And he's like, no, we're fucking not. And I said, I'm as serious as a heart attack. I said, I don't even have my bow with me. I said, I propped my bow up where I found last blood, and that's where it's at. Well, how far? I said, about a half mile back that direction.
So he was probably
pretty,
like,
pretty pumped.
Yeah. That's awesome.
He was pumped, but he's kind of like, shit, that's going to be a long drag.
Yeah. Well, you got him out, and that's the best part, right? I mean, everybody always says that's when the work begins. That's when the work begins. So, How many days? So you get the buck out, you celebrate your victory, but then your brother shoots a deer out of that same property. Like, how many days later?
Probably 3 days later. So obviously when you shoot a buck in September, it's, you know, in the Midwest, 75 degrees out. So you can't really let it hang. So we quarter it out. I quarter my deer out. I got a fridge in my garage, and I lay like plastic garbage bags on my rack. And then I just lay the quarters in my fridge, and I let it sit in my fridge for, I don't know, 4 or 5 days or until the weekend, until I can butcher it. And I hear the longer you let it kind of, what do they call that? Let it sit for a while, it can tenderize the meat. So my deer was still in the fridge doing that when he – I didn't go out with him the second night he went out.
Okay.
I was busy at home. So he went out by himself, and he texted me, said I shot a deer, and it was, yeah, three days after I just shot this buck.
Yeah.
On the same piece of property, is also kind of close to that pond.
Okay. So, obviously your brother, I mean, you knew some stuff was back there. You know, your buck's back there. You saw some does. 3 days later he goes back, and what's he run into?
He said he didn't, bump anything. He shot his buck, on the ground. He just stood kind of behind this. There's an old fence line. This is one of the fence lines they wanted tore out of this project that was surrounding the pond. So he kind of just brushed himself in into this fence line and stood. And, 30 minutes, probably end of shooting light. Well, first, it's kind of funny. He had a little six-pointer come out, and he drew back. He wasn't going to shoot it, but he drew back on it just kind of practicing, see if he's going to get nervous, because this is his second night bow hunting in his entire life, and see if he could pull back, without spooking the deer. And I can't quite remember if he pulled his bow back. I can't remember if he let his arrow down or if he kind of turned and he seen this 11 pointer walking towards him. It was one or the other, but he was messing around with his six pointer as an 11 pointer was walking towards him.
Okay. All right. So this 11 pointer, so he has multiple deer in front of him, and one within, is it the six pointer within shooting range? And then the 11 pointer is just like making his way towards him.
Yep. Yeah. The six pointer is probably 20 yards away, and the 11 pointer, it was the last deer out. He said, you know, it was whatever, 5 minutes behind everybody else.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that deer was walking towards him as he was fooling around with that six pointer.
Yeah. So how big is this 11 pointer?
I think we measured that one at like 122.
Nice. Nice.
And it seemed like he had a younger body than my nine pointer.
Really? Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like there's some good genetics in that area for the young deer that were there.
Yep. Well, I mean, they're never lacking food. That's for sure.
Absolutely. All right. So, he ends up smoking that buck. So two really good bucks come off of a 300 piece of what essentially is unpressured public. Looking back at it now, why do you guys think the deer were there? Why do you think that you guys were successful? You know, obviously there's a little bit of luck involved as far as you guys were probably the first couple guys really, you know, putting the pressure on the deer back there. But aside from that, like, what made those two hunts successful?
I think it was just the pure fact that was very unpressured land, that the deer all felt safe back there. Nobody was bothering them. It looked like the old tree stand was in there that hasn't been touched for 6 years. I just don't think those deer have been hunted for years back there.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with the success, and then just, you know, kind of setting up in them low bottom, cooler areas by the water, and just trying something new. Every time I seem to try something new and off the wall, and it might work, might not, it seems like it usually works out.
Yeah. All right. So do you think that now, one whole year later, this property is going to produce again, or do you think like people have caught on to it and they're, you know, you've noticed people back there?
Yeah, people are catching on to it last season, more towards like November and stuff, because I was bringing my wife back in there. We found another 10 pointer that lived back there, and we were trying to catch him on some fence lines, and I think people just seen our vehicles parked there, and I've watched bow hunters walk back in there, I don't know, a dozen times now. My wife had two pheasant hunters walk up right up to her and, oh, how's it going? I didn't know you were hunting here. And so it's pressured like a normal public piece now. But I'm going to try and get back in there in September. I like hunting early, just for the simple fact that you can kind of try some off the wall stuff. You got plenty of time, to get a deer. And I think for majority of people, they probably don't really touch the woods too much in September. So they're pretty, the deer are kind of still on their summer pattern, and people haven't started spooking them. Because once duck season starts and pheasant hunting and you get into October and the leaves start turning color, that's when people, you know, start going on their nature walks, or they go do their first pheasant hunt, and then it just kind of, the public land just goes downhill pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, so now that piece is pressured, what are you doing to, I guess, put yourself in a better position? Is it going back to the drawing board and finding some new property, or are you just kind of, you know, you mentioned you got 11 trail cameras out. Like, what's the yep. next step this year, knowing that that property last year is probably going to be pressured this year?
So where I have the 11 trail cameras, it's actually butted right up to Iowa. Half the time in my tree stand, I can be sitting in Minnesota and I can spit into Iowa.
Oh, wow.
Right on the Little Spirit Lake area there. And that's my wife's father and uncle's property. But I usually kind of try and not hunt that much until, like, you know, your mid-October, November, just kind of let it hang out, and then I go try all my crazy stuff on public land.
Yeah.
In the early season. So I do kind of know in the back of my head that I can go there. It's decent hunting land. It kind of sucks being butted up to Iowa like that, because the deer essentially go through two slug seasons, because I think your guys' slug season's like beginning of December or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's the first full weekend of December.
Yeah, so then Minnesota's is usually second weekend in November, so they get hammered then they get hammered again in December, and then the muzzleloader seasons don't line up, and then your guys' is, I'm not sure if our bow season starts before yours, but then your guys' bow season goes to like January 13th.
Yeah.
So a lot of the deer don't end up making it. I would say, but we do get a couple that come through. My father-in-law shot a 145 inch last year off that property.
Oh, nice.
But in the back of my head, I know I have that. And then, we've done a couple CREP projects where the government essentially pays the landowner to turn his cropland kind of back into like its natural state with some ponds and some grass and some, you know, pollinator plants and stuff like that. And I'm thinking about, we just finished one, and there's a little tree patch in the corner that I've watched a lot of deer come in and out of. And I'm thinking about maybe trying to do like a lease through him if it's cheap enough. So I might be doing something like that this year. We'll see.
Nice. Well, it's that time of year, right, where it's time to be as observant as possible, whether that's through trail cameras, whether that's through scouting. You know, we have about 4 more weeks maybe until the deer, you know, when the deer starting to shed the velvet. Once the velvet comes off, the deer start to get real territorial. The bachelor groups tend to break up, you know, shortly after that. And then there's this I always have found that there's this redistribution of bucks, right? They're not in the same spot that they were. Food sources change. You know, maybe some ags is starting to get harvested in this mid to late September timeframe. If it's dry, and this, I don't know about where you live, but it's been super dry here in Iowa.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I tell you what, man, I appreciate you taking time out of your day. Congratulations on you and your brother's last year's success. Good luck this upcoming season, man. Keep me posted. And I guess we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Sounds good. Best of luck to you, too.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode in the books. Huge shout out to Wes for taking time out of his day, sharing that awesome story with us, man. I love the strategy. I love the approach, all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes maybe there's a little bit of luck involved when you locate a piece of public that has never been hunted before. So that's a win there. Huge shout out to all of the partners, each and every one of them. Awesome brands. I love them all. Ozonix, Lone Wolf, Exodus Trail Cameras, Excalibur Crossbows, Wasp Broadheads, Vortex Optics, and Hunt Stand. Please go support the companies that support this podcast. And last but not least, man, good vibes. It's a good vibe weekend. I'm getting ready to go to Oregon, and I'm basically going to just be chilling with no kids for like 4 days or 5 days with my wife. This is going to sound weird because you're like, I love wine. Believe it or not, I love wine. I love meats. I love cheeses. I love like grapes and all that shit. And I'm going to Oregon, and me and my wife are going on some wine tasting. We're going to go check out the place where the movie Goonies was filmed, and I'm straight up loving it. So if you don't hear from me until late next week, that's where I've been. That's what I'm doing. Enjoy yourself. Live your best life. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.